This is Question Medicine 2016, and I am Andrew Bilt down here in sunny St. Petersburg, Florida, and here we go, episode 51. Yes, episode 51, and I know episode 50, Joe came back, but a little bit of discussion about jellyfish stings, and it was a different one, but maybe not one that made you say, ooh, wow, I didn't know that. And then I got to thinking, you know, there hasn't been a podcast that we've done here on Questioning Medicine for quite some time, a podcast that is actually debatable, a podcast that makes me, or rather makes you, say, holy smokes, I didn't see that one coming, or a podcast that gives a whole bunch of angry emails and saying, you have no idea what you're talking about. You must do rectals on all your patients because your head is so far up. Well, you get the picture. You get the picture. But it's the end of the year, and this podcast is probably the last one, well, or maybe not the last one, but one of the last ones before the end of the year, before the closing bell. So it's only appropriate that this podcast will leave you questioning medicine. So without further ado, here we go. Let's get it started. Question Medicine 2016.
So now there's drug-resistant strains, and it's causing quite a public health problem. Much higher rate. See how all the mean ones survive to procreate. So now the germs can beat up the drugs. So even if you're working towards your college degree, you could still contract drug-resistant TB, and you would just be fresh out of luck. Thanks to Urel and Old Spy.
Alright, in case you couldn't tell, this episode is about antibiotics. And I'm hoping by the end of this podcast, the end of this episode, I've changed your mind on how you think or how you talk or how you discuss antibiotics. I agree that bacterial resistance exists. So let's just get that out of the way. There is no doubt bacterial resistance to antibiotics is a real thing and is actually a real problem. It's called evolution. And even if you don't believe in evolution, in the whole evolution versus creation debate, there is no doubt that evolution exists in the bacterial world. It is an organism that evolves and that continues to survive pretty much based on that whole survival of the fittest thing that I'm sure you might have heard about. I mean, if you take a medication to kill a bacteria, not all the bacteria are killed. There are millions and millions and...
You know, I have one simple request, and that is to have sharks with frickin' laser beams attached to their heads
that are causing this infection. And so we don't kill all of them, but we kill most of them. And ones that are not killed will develop resistance. And those that are not intended to be killed, so bacteria that are sitting at other locations in the body, also will develop resistance. Now, a lot of this literature on bacterial resistance comes from petri dishes, which is incredibly interesting because I literally have never treated a petri dish. However, question must be asked, do we need antibiotics to cause resistance? Are antibiotics the reason there is resistance? I mean, if we had no antibiotics, zero, not one, not even penicillin, then could we just go ahead and say there would be no bacterial resistance? Well, the answer is no, not even close. There would still be resistance, but these bacteria evolve. Like I said at the very beginning of this, they evolve all the time in order to survive. And you think I'm lying? You think? Do you actually think that I would tell you a lie on this podcast? You don't believe me? All right, well, listen to this. There is a piece titled Antibiotic Resistance is Prevalent in an Isolated Cave Microbiome. This is by Bueller et al. And this is very interesting because they kind of attack or look at this exact point. These scientists culture, the microbiome of Luchaguilla Cave. I could be pronouncing that wrong.
Luchaguilla.
It's in New Mexico. And then they go into a region of the cave that's been isolated for over 4 million years. And the surface microbes, the bacteria that were sitting on the surface of this cave that had been isolated for 4 million years, the bacteria were highly resistant to antibiotics. Some of the bacteria were resistant to 14 different commercially available antibiotics. Resistance was detected to a wide range of antibiotics, including daptomycin. As some of you know, daptomycin is considered a last resort in the treatment of gram-positive bacteria. And these bacteria that are in this cave that's isolated for 4 million years are resistant to our antibiotics, and I can guarantee you they've never ever once come in contact with these antibiotics because they've been isolated in this cave and the antibiotics can't get into the cave because they're isolated because we created antibiotic. I mean, come on, the logic here is there. They're resistant. And why are they resistant? Because they evolve. They are living. And again, whether you believe in evolution or not, it 100% exist. In fact, it might be more fitting to say that bacteria are more fit to survive the zombie apocalypse than humans are.
Say what?
I know. That might sound crazy. That might sound weird. So now that we've sort of established that bacteria are going to pretty much evolve and do really whatever they want, I think it's time for us to tackle another myth, another piece that has to be broken down, another thing that'll have you questioning medicine, and that is, I am sure you have heard people say, maybe you've even said it to a patient before, or if you're a patient, you've heard it said to you, I can almost guarantee you that, ready for this? You need to take all of your antibiotics as prescribed to prevent resistance. First of all, no, that is wrong, and it holds no real scientific proof.
Say what?
I pause there, I take a break, and I'll repeat my previous words because I'm sure some of you might have just passed out. You just might now be waking up and being like, what did he just say? There's no way he just said what I think he said. Yeah, that's right. The whole take all antibiotics as prescribed in order to prevent resistance holds no real scientific proof. There's a great editorial in JAMA titled Shorter is Better, and they bring up a great point that in 321 AD, the Roman Emperor Constantine the Great said, there will be 7 days in a week. And to this day, that is how long we write most of our antibiotics. The reason or logic? There is none. It's not that six doesn't work. We just write it for seven because that's how many days are in a week. In fact, I can't find one trial that's ever been done with a shorter course of antibiotics versus a longer course of antibiotics where the longer course actually prevails. Of course, this is for the acute situation, not the chronic situations like tuberculosis and osteomyelitis. But in the acute situation, shorter courses of antibiotics are almost always far superior than longer courses of antibiotics. I mean, let's look at pneumonia. Used to treat for 14 days, now it's down to 5. A recent trial had it down to even 3 days. Urinary tract infections, used to treat for 10 days, now it's down to 3 days, with some trials that have shown that just 1 day of antibiotics is good enough. I mean, this isn't sex. When it comes to antibiotics, shorter is better. And this is for all sorts of things. Cellulitis, acute bacterial sinusitis, community-acquired pneumonia, nosocomial pneumonia, ventilator-associated pneumonia, complicated urinary tract infections, uncomplicated urinary tract infections, and complicated intra-abdominal infections. Yes, the evidence has all been laid out over and over. I'm not going to do a deep dive into all of them because, it's only my voice here, and I don't think you want to hear my voice go on and on over each study on how shorter is better. But I'm telling you, shorter is definitely better. In fact, not only is there no evidence that you need to complete a complete course of antibiotics to prevent resistance, we have the ultimate, what I call, anti-evidence. at least for pneumonia, that the longer course of antibiotic actually leads to increased resistance. The opposite of evidence. Not only is there no evidence, where you can't say the lack of evidence doesn't mean there is evidence, there is anti-evidence, or evidence suggesting that at least for pneumonia, a longer course of antibiotics actually leads to increased resistance. So what should we be telling our patients? It's not that we should be saying, take this antibiotic till it's gone, but rather, take it till you feel better, and then when you do, stop. I mean, look at cellulitis. Let's say there's a pretty severe case of cellulitis, and I treat it for 14 days, and at 14 days, it isn't gone. Does that mean that the patient only needs 14 days? No, of course not. I treat for longer or until it's gone because the numbers are just made up. And strep throat, the treatment for strep throat is 10 days, which ideally is to prevent rheumatic fever. However, if you go back to the April Fool's podcast, you'll see that that's likely a myth that's already been debunked. But let's be honest, how many kids actually take, or adults for that matter, actually take a full 10-day course of antibiotics? Anyone?
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
So yeah, take the antibiotics until you feel better and then stop, because taking a full course of antibiotics doesn't prevent resistance. In fact, usually the resistance actually develops not at the site of infection. The resistance emerges as the normal colonizing flora that we are just walking around with every day then becomes exposed to this antibiotic that you're using to treat at a different site infection, and then that normal flora becomes resistant to it. So shorter is better. And one last thing, one more topic in the antibiotic conundrum, one more thing I think I need to touch on before we close, and that is this whole bacterial static versus bacterial cytal. Is it bacterial crap? If you're not a provider, this one might lose you. So I'll just try to break it down in the simplest terms. Bacterial static meaning the chemical agent of the antibiotic stops the bacteria from reproducing, makes it static, but doesn't necessarily kill them. Where bacterial cytal, the antibiotics directly kill the bacteria. So hopefully that makes sense. One directly, or ideally, directly kills the bacteria. The other one just stops it from growing and kind of puts it in a static limbo, if you will. In the Journal of Clinical Infectious Disease, they just go ahead and say, the distinction between bacterial cytal and bacterial static agents appears to be clear according to the in vitro, so in a petri dish, definition. But this only applies under strict laboratory conditions and is inconsistent for a particular agent against all bacteria. The distinction is more arbitrary when agents are categorized in clinical situations, meaning that this works really well in a lab conditions in which we can control the entire environment, but when you throw it in a human being, which, you know, who knows what you're going to get then, this is total garbage. It's junk. In fact, call the trash man.
That's my character. I'm the trash man. I come out, I throw trash all over the ring, and then I start eating garbage.
So just stop it. Stop even saying it. And maybe you don't believe me. Maybe you say, I don't know. I mean, bacterial, you know, cytal, that actually kind of makes sense. And bacterial static, so.
Let's go to the videotape.
Yeah, that's right. Let's go to the videotape. And the tape, meaning the trials. So cellulitis, when you compare doxycycline, which is static, versus Bactrim, which is cytal, there was no difference. What about when you compared febrile neutropenia? You could use linezolid, static, versus vancomycin, cytal, no difference. What about MRSA infections? Here we go. Linezolid, static, Bactrim, cytal, no difference. What about skin infections? Linezolid, static, vancomycin, cytal, no significant difference. What about pediatric severe community-acquired pneumonia? We could use chloramphenicol, static, versus abetalactam plus gentamicin, which is cytal, no significant difference. What about gram-positive catheter-associated bloodstream infections? The bloodstream infections, the bacteremia. Well, we could use linezolid, static, versus vancomycin, cytal, when you go to the videotape, when you go to the trials, there was no significant difference. There are so many examples of this, and I would be happy to send you the articles. I'm not going in depth with the articles now because, again, this is just my voice, and to try to make this podcast any longer than 15 or 20 minutes tends to put people to sleep. Sorry. So before we close, there are a couple times when the static versus cytal has been shown superior. Here we go. Cellulitis, linezolid versus vancomycin. Linezolid, which is static, was found to be superior. Streptococcus pneumonia, linezolid versus cephalosporin, that is static versus cytal, linezolid won and was superior. So in case you're keeping control at home, static 2, so far cytal 0, with a whole bunch of ties or a whole bunch of no significant difference. There was one time in which ventilator-associated pneumonia, tigecycline, static versus imipenem, cytal, imipenem was found to be superior. So overall, the evidence says static versus cytal, it doesn't matter. It's for the people in the ivory towers. It's for the people that are writing textbooks. It's for medical students everywhere to sweat about and memorize charts about. But in real clinical practice, it doesn't matter. All right, that was a lot for this podcast. I'm afraid that further antibiotic ranting will only leave people daydreaming, and so I shall bring this to a close. Hopefully, this will be a podcast that will have you, yes, you, questioning medicine, questioning what you either tell patients, or if you are a patient, what you've been told before. Now, hopefully, I'll produce one more of these. We'll drop one more out there before the end of the year, but maybe, maybe not. You never know. If you have any questions or if you want any articles that I have talked about or mentioned or dropped in this podcast as well as any other podcast, feel free to reach out. Feel free to contact me on Twitter, Andrew Bilt, or email me at questioningmedicine@gmail.com. And so before I shut this one down, before I wrap up this podcast, I will end this podcast like I end every podcast. And that is, until next time, keep the quest and questioning.